Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Rotten Tomatoes is Wrong, the weekly showcase where we talk about movies, in this case, many films, and we decide whether the tomato meter got it right here at Rotten Tomatoes. My name is Mark Ellis. I am usually joined by my wonderful co-host, Jacqueline Coley. And usually, if she's not here, I'll say something glowing, like, oh, she's on assignment, she's working on a project. I bet Jacqueline is at home playing video games. And that is so well-deserved because she just came off the award season run where she's covering everything coast to coast internationally. We had the Oscars recently. And so Jacqueline Coley, deserving of her respite, play those video games, probably playing The Last of Us, given what everybody's watching on TV right now. So we have some ringers that we brought in to make up for the loss of Miss Coley. First and foremost, my good buddy, comedian, actor. You can catch him weekly on the show Capes and Cows. Mr. Winston Marshall. How are you, bud?
I'm good, man. I'm good. It's my first time in the studio.
Yeah.
This is fun. This is amazing.
You got call up to the show.
Absolutely. I mean, the whole time I've had the show, my like dirty office like that. You know what I mean? It's nice to be in like a curated, properly lit, like sounding without the echo and the construction in the background. Just chef's kiss.
It was always fun having you in like virtually, though, because you almost had the green screen take up your entire shop. But there was always a part where you're like, is that Winston's bed? Is that... Because you have like all these lights set up around your bed. Yeah. And I'm like, I don't know what Winston's doing behind closed doors, but it seems like he's got a thriving career on various websites.
That was the problem, is that like when you live in a studio apartment, like what do you do? Like how do you hide all of that? You kind of can't. So then people are like, oh, and I'm like, no, I swear to God, I was auditioning for Superstore. That's not what this was. I swear on Jesus.
You have to embrace the studio, and also making her debut on Rotten Tomatoes is Wrong, in studio or otherwise, it is one of my dear friends, and she has so much going on right now. She's a shining example of hard work paying off. That's actually the name of her short film that she stars and directed and is coming out soon. One shining example. Also, in theaters later on in March, we have Malum. It's getting a wide theatrical release, and it stars Miss Clark Wolf, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
And she did find a way to wedge some horror into this episode where we're talking about Mr. Keanu Reeves, his incredible body of work. He's had this odd career where we always loved him, but we weren't really sure if he was a good actor or we just liked him. Is he charming? Can he actually pull off a wide variety of roles? And I think after watching his resurgence with the John Wick movies and other things, we can safely say we're still not really sure. But that's why we love talking Keanu Reeves movies. And so what we did today is we picked one movie each that's rotten on the tomato meter, and we're going to defend that with vigor, or we're going to say, hey, it's rotten on the tomato meter, but it's still too high. It's going to be an interesting debate here. So we have a couple things I want to point out editorial-wise. On the website, RottenTomatoes.com, you can check out the 30 Essential Football Movies. That might factor into one of our picks here today. And we also have all the Keanu Reeves movies ranked. And here is what is nuts about our choices. Our choices are sequential on the list of all the Keanu movies ranked. So starting off with number 41 out of his 57 flicks in the tomato meter is Clark Wolf's pick, Knock Knock. So Winston Marshall, I'm just going to ask you, not Clark, is Knock Knock on the tomato meter currently at 37% rotten? Did Rotten Tomatoes get it right or wrong?
They got it wrong.
Okay.
Should be at one.
Oh, no! Okay.
Is there a
0% or number one?
1%?
Oh, boy.
Look, I'll give you 10. It could have 10%. Okay. And that's because I love the premise. And Clark, the one gift that I have to say thank you for, that might be the sexiest three-person cast of all time.
I mean, you're welcome.
That's exactly where it stops. I didn't know that Ana de Armas had a time in her life where she couldn't act either.
Oh,
cause
boy.
Because all of a sudden I was like, oh, so y'all just live in a fantasy land where none of this makes any logical sense, and you clearly have no idea that you live in a real world scenario whatsoever. Like, I don't have a problem with the idea of like the home invasion and all that, but the acting was so bad.
All right, well, be careful because Clark she's a master of horror as far as filmmaking and just being a fan goes. And Fair. So I feel like Clark might have some pushback as to why the acting was the way it was in that movie. But now we turn it over to Miss Wolf for Winston's selection, which is the tearjerker from 2001, Hardball, 41% rotten. Clark Wolf, did Rotten Tomatoes get that wrong?
I think so. I think with all of our picks today, the theme, I think, is going to be the type of movie we are in.
Yes.
And I think that there is something to embracing knowing what movie you're in. And so I think with a very tearjerker, sweet, you know, heartfelt story like Hardball, I think that everybody is showing up for that movie. Same with The Replacements.
Thank you, which is my movie. Had a perfect transition there because The Replacements, everybody definitely knew what movie they were in when The Replacements came out, from Keanu Reeves to Gene Hackman and everyone else. The Replacements, the wonderful football movie, very loosely based on a true story of the 1987 Washington football team, now known as the Commanders. It's 41% rotten. Winston, despite your affiliation with another team in the NFC East, what do you think about the 41% for The Replacements? Did Rotten Tomatoes get it wrong?
Absolutely got it wrong. This should be at like an 80.
Oh, thank you.
Like it is rewatching it for this.
Uh-huh.
It's very cheesy. Let's not pretend like there isn't camp in there. The cheerleader like audition scenes. that was a 57 fortitude. That is that 20 yards? How many yards it is? Like it has all these elements that are. You look back, you're like, this is very much a 2000 movie.
Sure, sure.
But the heart, like you said, in this film, Clark was talking about that earlier with Hardball. There's so much heart in it. There's so many like great lessons, because even though on the one hand, looking at the NFL now, I agree that the players should get as much money as they can, considering they're putting their bodies on the line, what the owners are taking, all that kind of stuff. At the same time, it was showing, hey, these regular Joes are out here in these streets and they deserve that recognition as well. They deserve that chance. I just love everything this movie has to give.
Yeah, it felt like they were playing for their city, which is our nation's capital. Clark Wolf, 41% rotten for The Replacements. How does that tomato meter score hit you?
I agree with Winston. I think it should be much higher. I think for what this movie is especially, but this cast is so good.
Yes.
Like they are, now again, we are painting with a broad strokes 2000s brush, so... That is your little disclaimer and asterisk. But that said, everybody is very good. And I have lost touch with him, but I was friendly with Orlando Jones for a while. And he, to me, stood out.
So good.
He's so good in this movie. He is a star and he's entertaining. And, you know, I love a dance sequence and yes. I get two of them in this movie.
We get a bunch. We get a prison dance sequence, which I don't know has been on screen since Jailhouse Rock.
Nothing has made me happier than seeing black people and white people and one Japanese guy come together and so poorly do the electric slide, but every time I'm in there with them,
having so much fun.
As we are about to on the show here, so we're talking about Keanu Reeves because we love him always, but also the John Wick franchise gets a new chapter March 24th. John Wick Chapter 4 coming out. I've gotten a chance to see the movie. I think it's currently 87% on the tomato meter. And that might not be high enough, man. The one word I'm telling everybody, I'm not going to ruin anything, nunchucks. Not sense. That guy in the sewer who looks like a turtle named Michelangelo. Have I seen nunchucks on screen? This well done.
Wow.
So again, we got all the Keanu movies ranked. You can check that out as well as the 30 Essential Football Movies on RottenTomatoes.com. Before we get into movie talk and defending our choices, we're going to turn it over to our buddy Tim Ryan. He's our expert review curation manager here at Rotten Tomatoes. And his job is to tell us what the critics were saying about these three films at the time of their release. As Clark Wolf would say, a very broad 2000s brush. It's all yours, Tim. 2 minutes
with Tim. Is there a celebrity more beloved than Keanu Reeves? Maybe that's a stretch, but is there a celebrity that makes everyone go, they seem like they're probably pretty cool, besides Keanu Reeves? Maybe Dolly Parton and Snoop, but it's a pretty small club. In his public persona, at least, Keanu Reeves is somebody who seems to wear his movie star status lightly. But that almost undersells the fact that he's also carved out one of the most distinctive bodies of work of any actor of his generation, from big-budget action films to small indie dramedies. So even if his movies aren't all critical raves, and even if he's taken some knocks from reviewers over the years, you have to give him credit for a willingness to try almost anything. So with that in mind, here's what the critics had to say about three of those less well-reviewed films: The Replacements, Hardball, and Knock Knock. The Replacements from 2000 is rotten at 41% on the tomato meter with 108 reviews, and it has a 66% audience score. Hardball from 2001 is rotten at 41% with 115 reviews, and it has a 70% audience score. And Knock Knock from 2015 is rotten at 37% with 75 reviews, and it has a 19% audience score. So what did the critics have to say? In a rotten review for Knock Knock, Chris Knight of Canada's National Post wrote, "Even fans of Ross' past work will probably be disappointed by the relative lack of gore in this one, which suggests a mix of horror and thriller, but quickly settles into more of the latter. But give Reeves full marks for committing to his role." However, in a fresh review for Hardball, Rene Rodriguez of the Miami Herald wrote, "Reeves hits a wide variety of emotional notes here, from Connor's comic befuddlement on the field to his mounting desperation as he dodges increasingly impatient loan sharks. He fares well, too, in his scenes opposite Diane Lane." So that's a couple of Keanu Reeves movies. Let's kick it back to Mark, who knows that all we are is dust in the wind, dudes.
Oh, man, that's a great, great outro, Tim. And back to us here talking about our three Keanu Reeves movies. But I will give a shout out to, again, my beloved co-host, Jacqueline Coley, probably playing a video game right now. She loves Constantine. So I'm going to put that out there. That's Constantine.
Good. Is that rotten?
It is rotten.
Yeah.
What?
And you hear Jacqueline is a voice of the people. I think it's like high 40s. It's like 49% or something like that. So
that was my first pitch,
46%,
by the way. Was,
yeah,
like, I was like, oh, can I do Constantine? And like, we've spent a lot of time on Constantine already. I was like, okay, fine. That's fine.
It's like all the Keanu Reeves movies are like countries in the board game of Risk. And you're like, oh, can I just see what's going on with Austria? They're like, Austria has been, it's been claimed.
It's done.
Okay. You got to go somewhere else. So that's what we're about to do as we transition into movie talk. Yeah, Constantine is an interesting movie sort of to kick off with, just in terms of the discrepancy between the tomato meter and the verified audience score, because a lot of these Keanu Reeves movies that are rotten, like Constantine, 46% of the tomato meter, all the way up to 72% with the audience. Same can be said for two of the three films that we're talking about here today, where the audience score dramatically improves. Another film, the audience score mysteriously drops precipitously in terms of when you look at the tomato meter. But let's just kick this off, Clark, with why do we love Keanu Reeves so much? Going all the way back to the first time you were aware of this human who is in movies.
I think he's just so sincere. He has such a sincerity and like a very an authenticity about him, to the point where I think if people are being critical of him as an actor, that might be where it comes from. Is he so much himself that maybe we have a hard time, or he has a hard time sort of breaking out and stepping outside of that?
He's his own vibe.
Yes, yeah, exactly. But I will say, you know, some of these movies, and we'll talk about it, but there are certain movies here where I'm like, this fits him better, or maybe this doesn't fit him as well. And that's I think, that's been the journey of his career as a movie star,
right,
which is a thing unto itself.
I'm curious for both of y'all's take on just the first time that you were aware of, like, was there a movie that was coming out and you're like, who's that guy? He's cute.
That's a great question.
I was doing that mental gymnastics in my head. I think it's The Matrix. And it's just from the standpoint of, like, I was born in 87, so
okay.
I watched the stuff that I watched. So, like, Ninja Turtles on repeat, the Power Rangers movie on repeat. Like, I didn't really stray outside of the things that I... So it wasn't until around when I became a teenager that I started to become more broadly aware of, like, movies, movie stars, etc. And I remember everybody being like, this Matrix movie is going to be wild. I was like, what is that? And then once I saw it, I was like, yo, that dude's really good. And then... remember the next year seeing The Replacements and being like, well, I loved Neo in that, you know, Matrix thing. He's killing it as a quarterback. And then he turned around and did Hardball, which is probably one of my favorite sports movies of all time.
Yeah, I think a lot of people agree with that too, even if it's such an emotional powerhouse and what a wallop it packs towards the end that we'll talk about. But yeah, I think a lot of people, even if they can't watch the end every time they watch it, it is such a rewatchable movie for that sports kind of juice you get. For me, it was Point Break when it was coming. And it's funny because I'm 7 years older than you, and so we're going back from The Matrix almost 7 years. I think Point Break was 91, but I remember coming out and at first blush, I was like, Keanu Reeve, is he Christopher Reeve's kid? I thought he was Christopher Reeve's son. And I'm like, man, this Reeve bloodline is just killing it. You got Superman, now you got this guy, because he was acting with Patrick Swayze, and I was way too young to like go see and buy a ticket for Point Break.
Right.
I don't know if I convinced my mom to drop me off at the theater for that movie, if she let me do it, because Patrick Swayze, big in our household. Mm-hmm. Let's just say, mom, fan of the Swayze.
Okay.
So I don't know if I was allowed to see that, but I definitely remember renting it. Mm. And then maybe the next year at most, Speed came out, and I was like, there's the guy again. And Speed was a great action movie. It's actually, I think, his second highest on the tomato meter. Speed is.
Yeah, it's number two. You know what's interesting is that I actually saw Speed 2 first. So like, and I liked Speed 2 because I didn't have context to see the first one and see, oh, this fell a lot. So like, for me, that's one of those guilty pleasures. Everybody goes, this is trash. And I'm like, no, it's not. And then I rewatched them about a year ago. Oh my God, this is awful.
I love Winston's perspective where he's watching the first Speed and he's like, I don't know if Keanu can keep up with Jason Patrick because man, was he really just going all out on that boat.
I love that you're bringing up you bring up Point Break, though, because I think to the essence of the question of Keanu, I grew up on Bill and Ted, and
that's a great that's definitely the first time I saw him. Now that I think about it, that's why she's the best.
Well,
she knows my history better than I know my.
You're welcome. But I was thinking about it, and it's like Bill and Ted is like this like bro kind of thing, which is so charming and fits him so well, and then we get into the surfing. And we get into Point Break, I think, and then Keanu is of that age where he's had box office success and he's a heartthrob. So he's having to break out of this sort of surfer dude kind of thing. And it's got to be a tall order if that's where the world knows you. I always think of Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Yes.
So that
a movie that should be talked about.
A movie that needs to be discussed at all times for reasons. But you know, I think that is not Keanu's best performance, but I don't think that's his fault because he should not have been in that movie. That is not, you know what I'm saying? Like, I think that is miscasting. But I understand why he was in that movie because he was hot and six, you know, big and young and all these things. So he just is such an interesting figure to place in opportunity for success.
Is that how you see Bram Stoker's Dracula with him playing Jonathan Harker in it? Because like the one thing you can't take away from him in that movie, and I don't think he's good in the movie, is that he's really giving it his all.
He is.
He's doing
yes.
everything he can. But to quote one of your former football coaches, Bill Parcells, saying like, if I'm going to cook the meal, you got to let me shop for the groceries. I almost feel like Francis Ford Coppola is like, okay, I got this cast. I got to handpick some of them. And then maybe the studio, maybe somebody else just said, hey, can you put this kid who's really hot right now in the movie too to appeal to the younger folks. Is that your read on it?
Yeah, that I could. Yes. That actually is a very good description of it. Is that let me pick it honestly, like The Replacements. Literally, like you're gonna let me handpick all the people, and then the minute Martell's
the quarterback.
Martell,
yeah. Other quarterback, the high paid pretty boy,
the Brady of the movie. as soon as he crosses the picket line, it's like, he's the owner saying, no, he's in. And he's right. like, no, you told me I could pick my people. I want Falco. And you're like, I don't care. You're putting it. That's kind of what that felt like a little
bit. Which is why one of the many reasons why I love The Replacements so much. And we can kick off this conversation about these three movies chronologically. Mm-hmm. And The Replacements is first in 2000, followed by Hardball in 2001, then Knock Knock in 2015, mm-hmm. I believe. Mm-hmm. So The Replacements, I mean, I remember coming out and my family being very excited about this movie because it is based on Washington, and that's like my family's just, it's in our blood rooting for that football team. And it was a very loose, true story that I'll go over very quickly. 1987, the year that we ended up winning the Super Bowl with Doug Williams as our quarterback and MVP, that season was strike shortened because you had one game that was missed because the players went on strike. And so when they were on the picket line, the owners said, well, this could last, like it could last a month. We don't know how long. Let's get replacement players in there instead. So some teams are like, oh, we're getting replacement players. How do we find this? But Joe Gibbs, the coach of Washington, is like, I'm going to take advantage of the hand I'm dealt and I'm going to find the best players. And if we're only playing for 1 week, if we're playing for 3 weeks, we're going to win our games. 3 weeks is how long the replacement players were playing in the NFL. Joe Gibbs' team won all three as Washington, wow, including a big Monday night showdown in Dallas against the Cowboys when Cowboy stars like Danny White had crossed the picket line. Mm-hmm. And we still beat the Cowboys. So it's like this big thing in history. So the movie, very, very many liberties taken with that lore. But you also have Gene Hackman as this coach who's looking to come back. Shane Falco, you talk about Keanu Reeves playing former college quarterbacks like he did in Point Break, gets to do that again as Shane Falco, who's just down and out, living on a boat, very simple life, trying to hold his dreams at bay because it doesn't seem like they're going to come through. Then he gets this opportunity, and we love a movie where a guy gets an opportunity as an underdog and knocks it out of the stadium.
I got to ask you a question. Because you just answered it, but I need to just verify that you're not just pulling my leg. You're telling me that they legitimately put amateur football players and still beat the Dallas Cowboys in like real life.
Yeah.
This is the worst day of my life.
Why do you think I invited you on the show?
I thought you were a horrible person. I thought because you missed me, but clearly it was just a troll.
Not saying I'm a good guy.
I brought your Washington Commanders gear. You let me borrow so I could shoot that TikTok. I'm going to burn it now. You're not getting it back.
Well, you know what? Whatever makes Dan Snyder just stay up at night. So you do the burning in effigy all you want. Clark, when you watch The Replacements, what is it about the movie for you that says, wait a minute, wait, the tomato meter got this wrong. This is a fresh movie.
First of all, I think that Keanu is really, speaking of casting, is really well cast in this. Mm-hmm. In that he's a movie star. But he feels so relatable. And I think that in the character of Shane Falco, it's like this guy who was a star, who had a bad day, and is somebody special, but has been sort of pushed to, you know, out of the spotlight. So I feel like he just inhabits that energy of somebody you can't take your eyes off of. You know that they are someone special, and yet they're living this humble, modest, kind of reserved life. And so it fit him. Like, I will get to Hardball in a second, but I will say his relationship with those kids was so great. Mm-hmm. But do I buy him as a guy who's like in trouble with loan sharks and what? I mean, no, I don't. You know what I mean?
So you buy more as just like that root for a bull underdog,
yes,
where he's going to take this ragtag and take them from a bunch of individuals and make them a team, which is really what he does in both movies.
Mm-hmm. And he's so, the other thing I like about it is like, you know, he's the star of the movie, but The Replacements is an ensemble. It's truly an ensemble. Mm-hmm. Like everybody has, I can tell you two scenes or gags or jokes with every character from the team. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the other part that really stood out to me about this movie, aside from the cast, which we talked about a little earlier, and them all being stars, is Gene Hackman. You know, Gene Hackman is one of those actors who I've always appreciated. He does not phone things in.
Never.
No, he doesn't.
It doesn't matter if something is quote unquote beneath him or whatever you might say. Like I looked at some of the negative reviews of The Replacements and it was like, what's Gene Hackman doing here? You know, whatever. But honestly, I feel like he's great.
Yeah.
He's great in this movie. And so, yeah, to me, that is sort of what makes this better than I think people give it credit for.
I think that's one of the things that legitimizes this movie, Winston, is that you have Jack Warden as the owner, you have Gene Hackman as the coach, Rhys Ifans, John Favreau, Orlando Jones. Like, there's so many great players in this movie. And I love your point, Clark, about just like making it feel like everybody gets their time to shine. My favorite moments in this movie are, I love when the players are at the bar and they're rallying around each other. They get into a fight. They're defending each other. Like, all of a sudden, they become individuals into a team, into a family of sorts. But the other thing I love, and you, I think you were at the tail end of this era in your football watching, is having Pat Summerall and John Madden.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah, that was fun.
That was amazing.
During games is great, but having them be the inner monologue of Shane Falco during that kiss scene at the bar where
so
it's
good.
Like, that is how, I don't know if every guy does this. I certainly do.
Yeah, but I'll tell you this. All it takes is one big play to get him back in the ballgame. And here goes Falco.
To this day, I have announcers in my head. They usually sound like either Al Michaels or Pat Summerall and John Madden commenting on everything I'm doing in my life. So if you think I don't have two guys in the booth when I'm on a date, you are sadly mistaken.
It's Bill Simmons, the bang, bang, you did it. Like, it's one
from
of
right
those.
Downtown,
But I that is the thing I think that's so amazing for me is, like, again, Orlando Jones, Faison Love. The, like, for me, it's just like a black youth, like, for comedy and, like, where my mind is going. Like, the whole, like, oh, this your car? Or, like, yeah, you know how Clifford Franklin does, baby girl. You know what I mean? I'd be out here in these streets, girl. And then, like, getting thrown out by Jon Favreau. But then even having those really heartwarming moments of, you know, I can't remember the character's name, but where he has his knee injury in college. And he's like, all I want is one touchdown. If I get one touchdown before I get out of here, then I consider this a success.
Right.
And I think for all of us that have really, like, sought after a dream one way or the other, you've had your highs, you've had your lows. You just hope for that one moment that you can get to that one goal you really want. And so having those little moments in there is what's so... I think what brings people back to this movie.
That's so interesting you say that, because you can watch any sports movie get inspired. Like, The Natural is a touchstone film for a lot of people, but you got to remember, Roy Hobbs, guy had a lot of talent. He was hitting dingers. I mean, he had that special bat, but also he was just talented. Then he got sidetracked. Mm-hmm. So he's a guy who you knew could do stuff like that and have that Kirk Gibson moment. But with these guys, it's like, this is the closest I've ever felt to being on an NFL field. Mm-hmm. Is I'm like, well, these guys could do it. I got it. There's got to be a role for me somewhere.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait till you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First, he ruined Twitter. Now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest coaches' leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
And the other reason why I'm so thrilled to have this particular panel today, Clark, is not just to rub it in Winston's face that we beat Dallas in, again, checks notes, 1987. I'm still dining out on it. But also you, hailing from Atlanta.
Yes.
So my Washington quarterback of the last couple of years, it's been a great underdog, very Shane Falco story, to the point where he actually wears a Shane Falco jersey to the stadium sometimes.
Oh, wow.
Really?
It's Taylor Heinicke. And Taylor Heinicke, as of this morning when we're recording this, just signed a deal for 2 years with the Atlanta Falcons. So he's no longer my quarterback, but I always love him. And he just gave us so many great moments. And he feels like a Shane Falco type because he's scrappy, he's an underdog. Mm. He played at ODU. He was undersized, wasn't the biggest arm, but he just guts out victories to the point where he's the winningest Washington quarterback we've had in some time. Now he's on your team. So you have Shane Falco on the Falcons.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Which is also a nice entry point as we get into Hardball here, because that's the next movie sequentially. And you talk about a film where any sports movie is going to get me somewhat emotional. Hardball does the impossible for Mark Ellis's cold, dead Grinch heart. It makes me root for kids, and it makes me so, I don't even want to get to the heartbreak yet, but it makes me root for kids, Winston. We're talking about The Last of Us right before we went to air, and like, did Joel make the right decision with that? And I'm like, look, I don't know kids, so I think that's an indefensible decision, but you put this movie on our table.
I did.
Is it the kids that get you? Is it Keanu? Is it the relationships?
It is definitely the kids. It does not mean that you don't appreciate what Keanu is bringing to the table, but it is definitely the kids. It is the back and forth, but it's also, just for context of where we're at this point, this comes out September 14th, 2001. This is 3 days after September 11th that this still drops.
And the soundtrack dropped on September 11th.
Yes, yeah. It did. And so, to one, it didn't like really gross that much of a profit. I mean, $44 million over 32. Like, that's not, that technically, if we're still falling under that, you got to do double your budget to get to marketing, then sure, you technically didn't cover. But for it to do any sort of money at that point, where a lot of people were scared in that moment, similar to the pandemic where you're just at home, people were not, they certainly weren't traveling, but they weren't going to the movies. But some people did because they needed a distraction. For it to do even that well,
for anybody to see this movie,
absolutely,
is an achievement.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. But for it to become such a cult classic, like, I will never forget the whole like Big Papa, like, mm-hmm, dancing to get the kid to like to be able to pitch and whatnot. I didn't realize it was Michael B. Jordan in this movie until,
right,
years later.
He plays Jamal, yeah.
Yes, he does. And so even to that, I'm like, oh my goodness. Like, you know, he's been out here doing it for a minute. And in my mind, I'm thinking, oh, The Wire was the first thing he did. Mm-hmm. And it's not. It was this. Mm-hmm. Or one of the first things he did. I know we're, you know, a lot of people in the Black community are tired of like white savior movies and this idea of like, I'm going to come in the hood and I'm going to fix you and blah, 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 blah. But there is something about this one in particular. And you see this with the kids, where at first, like, who is this corny white man? He's like, whatever. And you see Kofi is running his mouth nonstop. And he's like, man, you trash, dog. Why are you so fat? And why are you this or whatever? And so Keanu Connor hits a ball right at him. He goes, hey, why'd you duck? You scared? And they were like, oh, okay, coach got something, mm-hmm, here. And that was what Keanu was able to do.
What happened? Kofi just jumped out of the way like a baby. Why is everyone so quiet? What's up, Kofi? You scared of the ball? New rule. No one can say anything bad to anyone else on the field. Got it?
It's that Michelle Pfeiffer Dangerous Minds moments where it's like, you guys really want to push me? Do you know where I come from? Watch,
yeah,
this.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, Keanu Reeves, he's mixed race, but he can certainly pass as a white guy like me.
Absolutely.
When you look at this movie, and I'll give credit for this, and actually one of my favorite reviewers, she's killing me right now, Claudia Pugh from USA Today, she said, Hardball has more going for it than The Dismal Replacements, which came out the year before.
I did see that comparison, and I was like, okay.
I want you on the show, Claudia. You're my favorite movie reviewer, but you're just twisting that knife. For me, Clark, I was, and I, you know how much I love The Replacements, and with your movie Knock Knock, I think that Hardball has the best case for, like, seriously, why in the hell are you rotten on the tomato meter? Because I can understand people watching The Replacements and just thinking it's ridiculous and it's too comedic or whatever they might have. I can say it as cinema. I understand some of your gripes. With Hardball, I'm sort of dumbfounded. The only thing I can think of is, like, it just made critics so sad at the end because we lose somebody that we didn't expect to, and that's why they graded it lower?
Yeah. I mean, I think, well, this is a real combination of a lot of things. Like, so Brian Robbins directing, who was responsible for most of us 90s kids' childhoods, you know, of, you know, Kenan and Kel and sure, all that. Mm-hmm. Here's what I would say. This movie doesn't fit neatly into a heartwarming white savior movie. Mm-hmm. There's some really upsetting stuff in this movie, and not just the thing at the end, which I'm sure we'll get to. Watching these kids get beat up sucks. Like, I didn't care for it. You know what? I'm going to go on record as saying I did not enjoy watching these children be beat up. That was not great for me.
It always hurts my feelings, and that's one of the reasons why I hate that I'm rooting for kids in a movie, but it's like seeing kids get bullied, I cannot stand it.
And I think that maybe some of this might have been too real. Like, do you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like sure. This doesn't fit neatly into what we've come to expect from these movies, especially sports movies.
Sure.
So maybe it was a little like, I don't know what they were thinking, but.
Maybe they're saying, you're just tugging on that udder of emotion a little too much. Maybe you're overdoing it, but even that, it just feels like, It does feel like a more realistic sports movie as a result.
Agreed. So I certainly don't share that criticism, but sure. In terms of why did critics not rally around this, maybe that's a solution. I don't know.
It's funny because I was looking at some of these right now, and one of the ones that I can sort of agree with from Eric Childress, excuse me, who was saying that they kind of pulled the punches a little bit because it was PG-13. And okay. I sort of agree. There are moments, obviously, that I think you still hit on. So Jefferson getting jumped for his bag, the sitting on the floor, for gunshots, and then obviously the very sad ending. But yeah, you kind of only touch on it a little bit. I understand that Keanu is the main character here, but I always found myself way more interested as to what's going on in these children's lives.
Totally.
So whenever we went to his bookie situation, I'm like, okay, and like we saw Emilio do this already, with the Mighty Ducks. I don't care.
It's like we now that we met the team, we don't care about the coach's individual problems as much. I don't care about his DUI. I don't care about his gay, but let's just get back to the diamond.
Yes, absolutely. And so that is the one thing that I will say is I do genuinely wish I would have. One of my other favorite sports movies, Coach Carter, with Samuel L. Jackson.
Also directed by Brian Robbins.
Really?
Yeah. He also did well on the spot. No, see, you need more confidence. It's all in there. Yeah, you just didn't realize it. Yeah. He also directed Good Burger for...
He did. I didn't know that.
Yeah. But the fact that we have moments that when... I cannot remember the actor's name, but he is on Law and Order Organized Crime right now. Mm-hmm. He plays the Latino high schooler that like quits the team, and then kind of his cousin gets murdered, and then he still begs to come back.
Right.
It's the idea that we actually followed when he left the team and what that meant. We saw Jamal for half a second, and it was like, Jamal, and he's like, and just puts his head down. I would have liked to have seen a situation where maybe Jamal was forced to shoot along with them. And maybe he's the reason that G-Baby unfortunately passes. Or maybe he ends up like catching a case of some sort. Not because I want to see bad things happen, but if we're really going to go there, if we're really going to touch it, do it.
I will say when G-Baby is killed, I will say for me, it felt like it kind of came out of nowhere because we weren't following that story closely enough, right? It felt like two movies kind of being put into one. And so maybe, it shocked me. I mean, I feel like I had seen The Replacements on TV growing up, and maybe I had seen a scene or two of Hardball on TV, but I did not remember this ending if I had. And so, but I was like, we keep like dipping our toe into the real lives of these kids.
Right.
And then when this very extreme outcome happens, I was like, whoa, okay. It was very sad.
And the veneer of Hardball, and I think this is why it throws people for a loop, even like when I'm rewatching it, it's for very different reasons. It's like another sports movie, Tin Cup, where nobody's dying at the end of Tin Cup, but you just watch Kevin Costner's character, Roy McAvoy, he just keeps dropping a ball and trying to hit it over the water, and you're like, dude, you're blowing your shot at winning the U.S. Open. I can't watch that scene. So I love Tin Cup up to that moment, then I just go walk the dog. Same thing with Hardball. But Hardball had that veneer of Bad News Bears, of The Sandlot, of like these baseball movies that we just love, and oh, that coach isn't mismatched with these players. How is this all going to work? And then there are some genuine comedic, wacky moments, and it's funny, but then there's also just like, we were not expecting, the Sandlot and Bad News Bears did not train us for the drama in this movie.
You know what this feels like? Because I had mentioned the Mighty Ducks earlier. This feels like if the Mighty Ducks is the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, Hardball is Bel Air. I'm gonna show you what's really going reboot. On. Like yeah. the gritty reboot of like what this sure there this rich dude comes in, or in this case not that rich, but just like he's in yeah. his own little white world and he's coming down into it. And I just this movie will always have a special place in my heart, especially because we also got the rap supergroup, the Lil Rascals,
mm-hmm.
that consisted of Lil Wayne, Lil Zane, Lil Bow Wow at the time. And oh my God, and Lil Sammy.
There you go.
That track I had on repeat. I remember that was one of the first songs. I don't know if I can admit to crimes in 2001, but that was one of the first songs I legally downloaded off Kazaa.
Oh no.
This was
Lars Ulrich is listening. Don't let he's gonna come to call Metallica.
The Metallica van shows up. And
nope.
They're just blasting Ride the
That'll
Lightning.
That'll be 99 cents, sir.
It's like, it's not even your band, Lars. Relax.
Nope, it's the principle of the thing.
It's the principle.
Piracy is not a victimless crime.
It's
yes.
all it's all coming out now. Everybody just airing their dirty laundry here on Rotten Tomatoes is wrong. As we transition into Clark's movie, Knock Knock,
yes.
which is the most recent of the films. It also has the distinct pleasure of being the lowest rate on the tomato meter of the four, because Replacement's 41%, as is Hardball. Knock Knock a little lower, 37%. My opening question to you, Clark, is I know you love horror movies,
yeah.
and you're one of these people that can vacillate between your fun jump scare horror movies, your slashers where we're cracking jokes, and your elevated horror, so to speak. I'm curious what the audience was expecting in your world coming into this, because the audience score, unlike Hardball and The Replacements, where the audience score jumps up to fresh, here, 37% rotten for the tomato meter, 19% for the audience score. What did both the critics and the audience miss with this movie?
This is a great question, and I think this is a big part of why Knock Knock is not as well received as it could be. Hmm. The idea that it was sold on Eli Roth's name, Eli Roth, of course, co-writer and the director of this movie, best known arguably for the Hostel series and Cabin Fever before that. And I think that Eli, you know, Eli's a now, with more time, has directed kids' movies, and he's directed a plethora of different kinds of films. But at this point, if you're selling this as a home invasion movie from Eli Roth,
expecting a lot of blood and a lot of guns,
exactly, and starring Keanu Reeves, right? So, you know, I think the expectations is a big part of these scores. When I watch this movie, I'm like, oh, yes. Eli is, and that, you know, you do any reading into it, you see that he is remaking an exploitation film from the 70s. But this is Eli doing his European cinema. This is him doing a trashy exploitation movie, a sex movie. Like, this is a very specific type of film that if you don't know that going in, you probably are like, I'm sorry, what? And I also think that to the point about the acting, you know, there is a stylized type of acting. And I think that this is, for me, Keanu's, like, something that's so interesting, not just about Keanu Reeves, but about movie stars. When we know movie stars, we know what they should be doing and how they should be acting. And I think that this is just a wild performance from everyone involved, but everybody commits. And for me, that is the thing that I always appreciate and I always enjoy. I won't quote from it, but there is a monologue at the end of this movie where Keanu recaps the events that we have just witnessed.
Thank you for that.
He is tied to a chair, and it is... I mean, it is something.
You're gonna kill me. You're gonna fucking kill me. Why? Why? Because I fucked you? You fucked me. You fucked me. You came to my house. You came to me. I got you a car. I brought you your clothes. You took a fucking bubble bath. You wanted it. You wanted it. You came out to me.
It is so, but to me, that is not an accident. You know what I'm saying? Like, to me, Keanu Reeves is a very talented performer. This is just something a little outside the norm for him. And I think that style of performance is intentional. That would be my argument.
That's what I was going to ask you. Is like, Winston, I watched this movie and it just seems so, like, I'm prepared for like a thriller along the lines of something like The Strangers, right? Where there's a knock and you're like, what the hell is happening? And it's a home invasion kind of movie, like you said. Plus, this movie had the, I say displeasure coming out in 2015, a year after Keanu had his resurgence. John Wick, he's got the long hair. It's raining in those movies. There's a crap ton of violence. So we're like, oh, what's he going to do now as a bad guy? And then you watch it. There's a lot of camp to this, too. And it feels like, to hear Clark talk about it, feels like that was intentional, but you can only say that if it's really hitting home. And sometimes it just doesn't work, even if that's what you're expecting.
It's so what my issue is because I don't have a problem with any sort of committing. It's just that tonally it shifts so much,
yes,
and not in a balanced way that I can't ever anchor. So we kind of start off with him and like, oh, the monster's going to get you. And like, come on, baby, like, that acting in that moment with the family, I was like, this isn't good to start off. Then Louise shows up. I'm like, okay, he is clearly in a realistic world, whereas it feels like the family's like, we're in a movie. Bye, Dad. And then the girls show up, and that also feels very grounded, where it's just like, hey, we're stranded, and you can see that the grift is coming one way or the other, and then like they're kind of turning the sex appeal on and all that. All of that feels very like this is a real thing that's going on. Oh, dude, don't do it. Don't do it. And then the minute we actually get into the girls going a little bit crazy, that was almost 0 to 100 of like he wakes up and the entire kitchen is destroyed. I was like, I'm not saying that you don't go for it, but like, it was, why are we already doing 200 on the freeway? I was asleep for 4 hours.
Right.
And we're doing 200. Whoa.
So just the tone of the movie's jostling you around like you're in a 4DX theater and you weren't prepared for like all this just back and forth. And
then to that point, I get what Clark's saying is that actors should want to try and branch out. They should want to try different things, different states of emotions, different states of being. But like, when Keanu's having his full, hell yeah. Like, I don't believe that. I feel like they're like, more Keanu, more, more, more. And I'm like, no, less, less. I don't know.
Pull it back.
And this is, I will say because with the Eli Roth of it all, you know, with the excess,
yeah, yeah,
like in Hostel or Cabin Fever, we are just like over the top, right? And so, yes, to your point, instead of more blood, it's more screaming, more of this, more of that, right? And so again, like, a choice,
right.
And I totally understand a choice that does not work for everybody, but it is the type of thing that I love, the sandbox I love seeing Eli play in. I also wanted to mention, Eli grew up, one of his parents is an artist. Mm. He grew up in the art world, and so I love the idea of there's that little bit of satire, that camp around the art world and things like that. Like these, but again, I totally understand if it is not effective for other people.
I wanted to ask you, Clark, too, about, because you mentioned Eli Roth and having his name attached was a big deal, still is a big deal for movies and getting a film made and distributed. You have him and Keanu Reeves. This movie premiered at Sundance in early 2015, immediately gets picked up by Lionsgate because they're like, oh, it's got Keanu super hot right now. It's got Eli Roth. But it feels to me like the marketing for this movie may have been a mislead as to what it was, along the lines of something like when we saw M. Night Shyamalan's name in The Village and we're expecting this is a creature feature, turned out to be something very different, which left me cold as a viewer at the time. But now I watch The Village, I'm like, this is a great movie, because now I don't have that set of expectations. Mm-hmm. It Comes at Night, another horror movie where it's like, feels like it's setting you up for one thing and ended up being something else. So it's an increasingly crowded space with how many films are made. So you feel like you have to stand out. If you're Lionsgate, you're like, okay, we just bought this thing. We got to make it stand out. We got to make a trailer that's going to sell this movie, put butts in seats. It ended up costing, I think, $2.5 million. And the worldwide gross was like $5.5 million. But is that part of, I guess, your argument where it's like, this movie was not marketed, so we already had a different set of expectations in our head than what we should have had given what the movie actually wanted to be?
I would agree with that. I would also say this is the first time I saw Ana de Armas, and I know you did not care for the performance. I love her in this movie.
Okay.
She's wild, and that's the thing. Like, so then I started thinking about Deep Water. with her and Ben Affleck. That is, this is, I believe that's Adrienne Lynn. So it's this like real throwback erotic thriller in the vein of like Basic Instinct and Fatal Attraction or whatever. So it's different. And I would argue Deepwater didn't actually go there far enough. But that was another one where I was looking at the acting. Like Ben Affleck is so wild. It's like, it's just these performances. If you transport them back to 1992, you're like, oh, this would be a different story. But I bring it up because I think that if this movie came out now, maybe, and it was, and we were having the conversation of like, this is very much in the vein of your, you know, exploitation, and it is a sex movie. And it's, oh my gosh, y'all, Ana de Armas, it just, daddy. And then
I thought she did well with that.
And then in Blonde, though, she's just nominated for an Oscar, right, and she's calling everybody daddy again. And I'm like, oh my God.
You were trained for this.
I just love, yes,
was,
girl, yes.
Run.
It's the daddy. Oh, daddy. Yes. Oh my God. It's just, I get it. It's a hoot.
You know, Clark, it's funny you mentioned that because if we did it again this year, the one thing that kept ringing into my head, honestly, is are either of you Black Mirror fans?
Oh yeah.
This, as much as I can stomach, and don't watch it right before you go to bed. It's not that kind of show.
Oh, I made
your
a mistake
dreams,
one time.
You're going to have some NyQuil dreams.
The one with the video game? Not the one with Anthony Mackie. Not that one. The virtual reality one with Wyatt Russell.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Watched that to sleep, and then I had the worst nightmare.
I did the same exact thing. We should start a group.
Seriously. But Shut Up and Dance. If you remember that one, that's where the kid gets this anonymous text, go to this spot right now, or I'm going to send the photos of the video of you to little kids. And then as you go through, you find out all these people that are being forced to do it, also that exploitation. To kind of see that there where like, sure, there were little moments of comedy about them arguing who was going to rob the bank and who was going to drive the car and things like that. It was so grounded in such a ridiculous premise that I was like, oh my God, the entire time. Whereas this, when at points I'm seeing Keanu from Speed after the stairs blow up and he's like, like, I was like, bro, bring me back. What are you doing? That, and I honestly did like Anna's performance. It could be uneven just based off overall what's going on, but like Lorenza, sometimes she was just too much for me, and I didn't necessarily believe what was happening. And I don't know if that's the writing. I don't know if that's the acting. I'm not sure where we connect those dots. But I understand why Keanu would have been attracted to this project. If done properly, this is the type of premise that you eat up. This is the type of thing that could get you an Oscar nod at some point. I mean, look at what Parasite did. But like, I just don't think it was executed very well.
I feel like this movie could limp into close to fresh territory, but I don't think I can get it to fresh. Winston has it downgraded on his tomato, on his personal.
I'm just gonna say, interesting choice of words.
The limping to fresh. So that is Knock Knock. And but Clark, I also wanted to ask you, because you have this new movie, it's getting a big theatrical release.
Yes.
Malum,
yes.
Tell us a little bit about that and how, you know, you look at a movie like Knock Knock and you want the audience to understand what they're going in for.
Yes, a great, great point. So I am in a movie called Malum. It is in theaters on March 31st. It's a small, it's an indie horror movie from a new production company called Welcome Villain. And when I say it's in theaters, it's like not day and date, not doing like a weekend. It's going to be in theaters. So
we got us a run.
Go check it out. You know, horror is having, especially indie small horror is having such an interesting time at the box office right now with Skinamarink and with, you know, Terrifier 2 and Winnie the Pooh Blood and Honey. Like, it sounds funny, but all these movies are crossing the $1 million line because they're actually getting a theatrical release. So Malum is a reimagining of an independent film directed by Anthony DeBlasi called The Last Shift. A lot of people have seen it maybe on streaming services. Came out, I believe, in 2015. And Anthony made that movie for very little money. And with what he was able to do, I love The Last Shift, but like knowing how hard he worked and what little resources he had, it's amazing how effective that movie is. And so when Welcome Villain was starting up, they went back to Anthony and they said, hey, would you ever want to revisit The Last Shift with more resources and more money? And he took them up on that opportunity. which is like such an amazing thing for a filmmaker. And so he has been describing it as it's not a reboot, it's not a remake, it is a reimagining. They are separate movies, but you will see a similar through line here. Huh. And one of the things that Anthony was able to do was really expand on the cult. So the premise is a rookie police officer, her father, it was a police officer as well, he was killed at this police station when a cult that he had stopped came for him.
Mm.
And wow. So her first shift as a police officer is to guard the abandoned police station that he died in overnight.
Oh, that's not going to be something.
Then you know what? No. It doesn't go well.
No,
just, no.
No
spoilers.
It's going to go so smooth, I think.
So, yeah.
See, I already know if it had been a black boy and his daddy had been killed like that, I'd be like, well, Dad, I'm sorry, son. I got to get out of here. I can't. is that some fire? I got to go. I can't.
So I play one of the cult members, and that is something that is different from the first film to this reimagining, is we really get to spend more time with the cult and with this mythology. The Russells, who have done the practical effects for the new Hellraiser movie and so many awesome practical effects, did our creature effects as well. So it is a wild ride.
It's so exciting
it's really
to have
fun.
This coming out and have a theatrical run where folks out there can see, because I've always said this about horror movies, I think even more so than comedies, I think horror movies are the flicks that you want to see in a theater opening weekend with a packed house, because just the way people are reacting, I don't
like,
know
nope.
that we're getting Winston there.
All right, that's fine. That's
what was
fair.
The last horror movie you saw in a theater?
Scream 6.
Okay.
I don't
mind.
I actually like the Scream franchise.
You can do the Screams, okay.
That's easy to do for like a multitude of different reasons, but there is a level of like comedy to it that it doesn't fully... any Jordan Peele stuff, mm-hmm. I won't lie. Every time that Daniel Kaluuya said nope, I was like, yeah, nope. Nope, absolutely not. But also because seeing those are always fun, because if you haven't, I highly recommend the next Jordan Peele movie that comes out. Go see it at a black theater.
Oh.
Because when I tell you, black folk treat it the same way that we treat live theater, and we will talk to the movie as the stereotype goes, but like to collectively, like at Get Out, I had this one... There was this one dude that when he was looking at the photos of all the different people she had kidnapped, dude goes, uh-oh, not Darrell and Tyrone and LaQuisha. Yo, homie, you better get out. Like, I absolutely
oh,
lost
so
it.
That's where the title came from.
Yes.
Just kidding.
Yes.
That's so good. Yeah, so, and I know you saw Us.
I did. I loved Us.
Yeah.
I loved
so
Us.
So we can get him to the theater, I think, from now, which is you can nationwide on March 31st.
I will always support homie. So while I may be in there the whole time being like, I can't believe I'm watching this for Clark, I'll do it.
No, he's buying a ticket and then he's hanging in the lobby for 2 hours.
I love it. Then
we're gonna come out, he's going, oh, it was so good. I loved it.
You man.
Ask him one thing about the plot. Oh yeah, that was a cool plot.
Oh yeah, that police that thing. Yeah.
Is it more of a thriller? That's my question.
It is not.
Okay, it's a straight
it is
horror.
Straight up
okay.
horror. I will say that is the thing that I've been telling family and friends is like, you know, this is not a crossover movie. I don't see a lot of crossover. If you are a horror fan, this is a movie for you. I mean, truly, it is. And don't get me wrong, the acting is great. I watched it last night, so I've seen it. The acting is great. If you're into true crime, like the cult element is really interesting and all of that. But yeah, this is a movie for horror fans, which is really fun. And I hope they get out there and
wait
enjoy it.
As of this taping, mere weeks away from Malum opening in theaters March 31st. I want to end this movie talk segment quickly by reminding everybody that Keanu Reeves, as Clark highlighted, many of us first met him in the Bill and Ted movies. Happy to say that both Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure and Bill and Ted, the most recent one that came out, is fresh on the tomato meter.
Wow.
Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, 56%.
Just
missing that fresh mark. I think that's a fresh movie. I think that movie might have been ahead of its time, and it was a sequel that was made around the time we got like Batman Returns, where it's like sequels, and they went in rapidly different directions than the audience might have expected.
How'd the audience do on it, though?
56% for the audience as well.
Wow. Divisive.
56%. They didn't like Station Enough. That movie's fresh alone for death, and his performance, it's just so good. Damn right. All right, let's go to the big finish. Brian, hit the music. Thank you so much to my special guest joining us today, Winston A. Marshall. Where can all the fans out there find you and your love for the Dallas Cowboys, who, checks notes, did lose on Monday Night Football in 1987 to replacement
You're
players.
Just going to keep doing this,
fielded by Washington.
Why do I keep coming on this show? You can find me at The Swaggy Blurred. I am doing all the things across all the platforms, man. So YouTube, TikTok, Twitter, if you want to see me, you know, come with people trying to come for the Queen Angela Bassett. I'm not here for it. I'm not. But all across that stuff, I got a lot of comedy stuff going on there, a lot of sketches and whatnot, but and then also some great review shows. And I'm also, as Mark mentioned, on Capes and Cows with Christian Harloff over on his channel as well. So come check all that out. Come say what's up. Got some fun stuff coming up in the next couple of weeks that I'm very excited. I don't want to ruin any surprises, though.
There you go. So yeah. You could kind of say, like Capes and Cows speak, you could say The Sandlot is like Batman and Robin, and then Hardball is like The Batman with Robert Pattinson, where it's like the same kind of sport, but very different,
very different
vibes.
Very different.
Very different vibes. Clark Wolf, thank you so much for joining us. It's my fault that we took so long to have you on the show, but I'm glad we timed it well because you got the short, A Shining Example coming out, and then Malum in theaters March 31st.
Indeed, you are correct. And can I just say, we just did this entire show. I just noticed that camera, my camera.
Wait, bruh, for real?
Definitely. Only just noticed that camera.
She just got out of a cult, everybody. Give her a break. She's still reacclimating to normal society.
But see, that's amazing, though, because you were just like kind of, I was
playing to the wide. Anyway, thank you for having me. This was very fun. Yes, Malum is in theaters on March 31st, and you can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Clark Wolf. Clark with an E, Wolf with an E.
All right, I guess this was the dress rehearsal. So now everybody knows where the cameras are. We're going to knock this whole episode out again. I am merely Mark Ellis. For upcoming stand-up dates, you can go to markellis.live. Thank you so much to the whole team here at Rotten Tomatoes. Reminder that occasionally on this show, we do like hearing from you so much that I'll read an email that you can send anytime. rtiswrong@rottentomatoes.com is our address. Let us know what movies you want us to talk about, your thoughts on the movies that we just covered. What is your favorite rotten Keanu Reeves movie? Comment and let us know whatever you like to do for your favorite podcast. Subscribe, rate, review. Do that for us because obviously we're your favorite. And next week, it's an After Dark, and we're going to be celebrating 25 years of Rotten Tomatoes. Some special guests on that show that may look very familiar if you just watched our show here today. Whether you watched, you listened, we always appreciate it. For the whole gang here at Rotten Tomatoes and my beloved co-host, Jacqueline Coley, I am merely Mark Ellis saying, chicks dig scars.